Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Welcome back, everyone. Today on the Deep Dive, we're stepping into a world that's, well, both incredibly raw and deeply insightful. We're talking about Rita Bullwinkle's novel, Headshot.
That's right. And if you, our listener, are thinking this is just another sports story, think again.
Exactly. This book, Bullwinkle's debut novel, uses boxing, yes, but it's really digging into something much bigger. Female adolescence, finding identity, and the very complicated nature of controlled violence.
Yeah.
And Bullwinkle's style is just so unflinching. She was already known for her short stories, Belly Up, which had that same visceral quality, that focus on young women's, let's say, unvarnished experiences.
Yeah, she has a real talent for that. And being a Californian, you kind of feel that specific cultural backdrop, even in the intensity of the setting here.
Right. The novel came out, what, 2023, 2024? And immediately people started drawing comparisons.
Just some pretty big names, yeah. Joyce Carol Oates, obviously, with Unboxing, and Atessa Moshfegh, too, which makes sense given Moshfegh's focus on alienated young women.
It fits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because Headshot manages this strange balance. It's almost clinical in its structure.
Like watching a tournament play out, yeah.
But then it dives so deep psychologically into the minds of these girls under immense pressure.
So let's lay out the basic premise for you listening. It all happens incredibly compressed over just one weekend.
A single weekend at a teenage girls amateur boxing tournament in Reno, Nevada, of all places.
And we follow eight specific competitors through this gauntlet. Our goal today really is to unpack their inner lives. Why the ring? Why this very specific, very physical form of expression?
Yeah, what's driving them?
And that gets to the core tension, I think, this paradox of female strength. You have these young women actively cultivating power, aggression.
In a world that's often uncomfortable with that, or even threatened by it.
Precisely. So each fight isn't just for points or a medal. It's a confrontation with family expectations, with personal history, with what society says they should be.
So the tournament itself, this contained space, becomes a metaphor.
A perfect one. A metaphor for that bigger fight just to exist, to claim some agency.
Okay, so if that's the heart, let's talk structure. Because it's not just a backdrop, it shapes everything.
It really does. It's brilliantly done. The book literally follows the tournament bracket.
Quarterfinals, semifinals, finals.
Exactly. And that creates this relentless forward motion. You feel the stakes constantly rising, this logic of elimination, as you said. It's quite intense.
And the setting just dials that intensity up, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's deliberately stark. You know, harsh fluorescent lights, the smell of sweat, and maybe cheap cleaning products, those generic hotel rooms.
No glamour here.
None at all. It's claustrophobic. Bullwinkle uses that confinement as a crucible, stripping away distractions so the focus is entirely internal on the girls' thoughts, their bodies, their pain.
And because everything external is stripped away, the novel can ask its real questions.
Mm-hmm.
It moves beyond just who's going to win.
Right. It becomes about, okay, what does it cost to even be here? And maybe even more fundamentally, what deep need drives someone to embrace this kind of violence, even sanctioned violence?
So how does she explore that? Not through a single hero's journey.
No, and this is technically quite interesting. She uses what's called a roving third-person omniscient perspective.
Meaning we jump between heads.
Yeah, essentially. The narrative voice isn't tied to one girl. It shifts fluidly, sometimes even mid-paragraph, dissolving the boundaries between their individual consciousnesses. Mm. You get this sense of a collective experience, almost like telepathy among rivals.
Which is fascinating because they are rivals, but they're also united by this shared extreme experience, this sacrifice.
An isolated sisterhood, someone called it.
That's good. So let's map out the range of motivations. Maybe start with Rose and Kate. They feel like key contrasts.
Definitely. Rose is, well, she's the stoic one. Very controlled, almost detached in the ring.
Yeah.
Enigmatic.
You feel there's a lot going on underneath that surface, though.
Oh, for sure. Deep personal pain, maybe trauma connected to home. For her, boxing feels less like a sport and more like a necessary confrontation, a place to put the rage that might otherwise, you know, explode.
Okay. And Kate, she's almost the opposite pole.
Completely. She seems to come from a more intellectual background, maybe more privilege. Her fighting feels like a conscious rebellion against expectations, against being compliant, maybe.
Yeah, she analyzes things, approaches boxing almost like a math problem.
Right. Her whole struggle is about bridging that gap between the thinking mind and the body's instinct. It's fascinating.
So Rose fights from necessity. Kate fights out a defiance.
In a way, yeah. And the other girls fill in the shades between. You have Artemis.
Whose name alone tells you something.
Right. Mythic intensity. Her approach feels almost ritualistic, spiritual even.
And Dahlia, carrying the weight of family.
Yeah, the boxing legacy. That's immense pressure. Her fight is about duty, honoring the past.
And Teresa adds another layer of faith.
Yes. How do you square deep religious belief with the need to inflict harm in the ring? That's her internal battle.
And linking almost all of them, often uncomfortably, are the fathers.
Ah, yes. The fathers. Capital F. They are omnipresent.
Coaches, motivators, cornermen, but also sources of incredible pressure.
Totally. It feels like they're projecting so much onto their daughters, their own missed chances, their hopes, their failures.
So every punch landed, every round won, feels like it's echoing something from the past, a generational thing.
Absolutely. Bullwinkle really digs into how deep that influence runs. Even if the girls chose this, can they ever really escape that shadow, that weight of expectation? It makes you question how much is truly their choice.
Right. Is the ring really a space of pure freedom if your father's approval hangs on every jab?
It's a high-stakes proving ground, maybe more than anything else.
Okay, let's trace the narrative path through the tournament itself. How does it begin?
It starts quietly, almost ominously. The weigh-in, the pre-match rituals.
There's a lot of focus on their bodies being measured, judged.
Intensely. Quantified, categorized. That scrutiny emphasizes how public their physicality is even before they fight.
Then the quarterfinals kick off.
And this is where we see those internal conflicts play out in their fighting styles.
Yeah.
You know, Dahlia's legacy versus Teresa's faith in their match.
Yeah.
Or Kate's analytical style clashing with Ian's, who seems more purely instinctual.
And Rose.
Rose is methodical. Clinical, almost, fighting for control, not for show. Efficient.
But then things escalate in the semifinals.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The field narrows, the physical toll mounts, but more than that, the emotional stakes just skyrocket.
Right.
This is where pure grit takes over. Mental fortitude becomes everything.
Because now you're so close.
Exactly. And the disappointment of losing at this stage feels existentially crushing. The physical pain gets tangled up with that deep psychological blow.
And then the climax. The final bout.
It's brutal. And Bullwinkle doesn't rush it. She slows time right down, gives you this blow-by-blow, almost thought-by-thought account. It's as much a psychological battle as a physical one.
You're inside both fighters' heads.
Completely. Yeah. Understanding the choices behind the punches, the fatigue, the desperation.
But the ending. It avoids that typical triumphant moment, doesn't it?
Absolutely refuses it, which feels crucial. Instead of celebration, it lingers on the aftermath. The physical wreckage, the emotional emptiness, as the text suggests.
The tournament's over, but the fight,
yeah.
The internal fight, clearly isn't.
No. And that leads us right into the core themes. What is Bullwinkle really exploring here?
Well, the first big one seems to be about the body. Bodily autonomy, strength, yes. There's this key insight, almost stated directly. The ring is one of the few places these teenage girls feel their body belongs entirely to them. That makes so much sense. Outside the ropes, their bodies are constantly being looked at, judged, controlled by others. Parents, society, the male gaze.
But inside, that movement, that power, that control, it's theirs. A jab, a dodge, it's an act of self-determination, taking ownership.
And that ties into the violence itself, right? Violence is a form of expression.
Exactly. The aggression they feel, maybe from trauma, frustration, just the pressures of being young women, it finds a channel here, a sanctioned, controlled outlet.
It's almost like they're performing their internal state physically,
right.
Communicating something words can't capture.
Right. It contrasts so sharply with the messy, often uncontrolled conflicts of their lives outside the ring.
And beneath all this, there's also a critique, maybe, of meritocracy. The idea of a level playing field.
I think so, subtly. Can it really be a fair fight when these girls bring such different levels of support, resources, and, importantly, trauma into the ring with them?
Yeah, the competition isn't just opponent versus opponent. It's also each girl versus her own circumstances.
Which are vastly unequal. It definitely complicates the idea of a simple winner.
Let's talk about how she tells this story. The style is so distinctive. We mentioned the roving perspective.
Which creates this blend of, like, clinical observation and deep intimacy. It's unsettling but powerful, like watching a Greek tragedy unfold almost.
And the prose itself mirrors the action, doesn't it?
It really does. Short, sharp, percussive sentences during the fights. You feel the impact.
Like jabs.
Exactly. But then she shifts seamlessly into these much more lyrical, flowing, internal passages, exploring their thoughts and feelings. It captures the rhythm of a fight, moments of intense action, followed by moments of desperate introspection or gasping for breath.
Okay, symbolism. The ring itself has to be central.
Absolutely. It's constraint. The ropes literally box them in, but it's also possibility. Within that constrained space, they find a kind of ultimate freedom or self-definition.
A paradox.
Huh.
And the title, Headshot.
It works on two levels, doesn't it? There's the literal knockout punch, the fight-ending blow, devastating.
Also, the photographic term, the close-up portrait.
Exactly. The novel gives us this incredibly intimate, stark headshot of each girl's inner life under extreme pressure. It's about capturing that vulnerability as much as the violence.
So the book leaves us with some pretty heavy questions to think about.
Definitely. Like, how much do we have to destroy, physically or mentally, to build something new in ourselves? And maybe, why does society make it so hard for young women specifically to claim their space without such a fight?
It really forces you to confront assumptions about female ambition, strength, vulnerability. They're all tangled together here.
Ultimately, I think Headshot shows that the toughest battles aren't necessarily in the ring. They're the ones fought inside. That's where the real stakes are.
A powerful insight. It reveals that strength and fragility aren't opposites, but maybe two sides of the same coin for these young women. Mandatory closing line. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.